going on, everybody? Jeff Mosher, Adam Kaplan here for another Inside the Birds. Got a few items to get to. Then we're going to answer some Ask ITB questions, wrap this up into a nice, informative Inside the Birds, as we always do. And as we love getting to your questions. So a big part of that, we'll be answering some of those. It's about that time, Adam, right, with the Eagles in the middle of the OTAs. And then next week, I think we'll be the ones where we get to kind of get out there and take a look ourselves. So I look forward to those where we can kind of report back a little bit on what our own eyes see. But for now, we're going to tie up some loose ends on some things we've been discussing and then get into the questions that people have for us. Great Q&A this week. They did exactly what we asked. You know, a week ago, they broke down the entire defense scheme, personnel, philosophy, approach, all of that, really X and O. And then this week they're doing the offense. And it's kind of cool because they had a little debate on whether the team should be more pass happy or more run centric. Jason thinks they should be run centric again. Quentin Michael says, well, what about all those resources you put into AJ Brown? $20 million says that you should probably use them a little more. And then, of course, you know, they did draft Grant Calcaterra, and this is supposed to be another year of evaluation to Jalen Hurts. I think you and I probably would agree with Quentin a little more than Jason as you've got to open it up a little more.
They're going to. As I said weeks ago, if they don't, there'll be a quarterback change sometime during the season.
Right.
It means they don't trust Hurts. That you don't need to guess. That's exactly what it means. Mm-hmm. The answers to the test are given. They're not going to put up with this for another year. They give the head coach credit. And he also made Hurts part of the running game. That was a smart move. It's good coaching. But you know what? They don't have Derrick Henry here. If they had Derrick Henry here, I get it. Plus, Ryan Tannehill, you don't want to ask him to do a lot. He functions better when you don't throw the ball a ton.
Right.
With Hurts, you saw, as we said before, you saw some good things last season. You definitely saw some things that need major improvement.
Mm-hmm.
But with this ownership, and their belief in analytics and passing the football, particularly early, which Joe Banner brought in. Joe's told me many years about coming out and throwing in the first half and then running to win the second half.
Mm-hmm.
That works when you trust your quarterback. So if they don't trust him, there's no way to predict this. They're not going into the season thinking they're going to have to replace Hurts, but they're going in, as you said, and Q said, they've added resources on offense, particularly, and a major one in A.J. Brown. That's a major commitment.
Absolutely.
They're going to have to throw the football. You're not going to hide A.J. Brown. In fact, if you remember, Roseman and Sirianni both said at that dual press conference, they want more pass targets to their top guys. I mean, that they gave you the answers. You don't need to guess on that one.
Right.
That's good for fantasy, by the way, if you're picking that up. That's good for Dallas Goedert out there. Right. And Devonta.
Yep. Now, another area I wanted us to talk about, because I definitely side with them on this, and I don't want to give away too much of what they say. I'll just kind of categorize it in that they talked about the slot receiver role in Quez Watkins, and mm-hmm. Jason feels like Quez Watkins is not the type of wide receiver that you just shoehorn into the slot because you have Devonta Smith and A.J. Brown on the outside. And he talked about the intricacies of playing the position and what you need to do well. And some of those things are not Quez Watkins' strong point.
Correct.
But some of the things that are Quez's strong point, which is the ability to separate, the ability to command defensive attention from the perimeter, would helps the rest of the offense as far as opening up, you know, you're clearing out safeties, you're opening up space for your other receivers and tight ends. So I kind of agree with that. And I'll be really fascinated to see how they address the slot position between Quez, between Zach Pascal, who was more of a natural slot. And then also, of course, if Jalen Reagor's still on the team, if they're going to play him there as well. And, you know, as of now, he's on the team. So, I think it'll be really interesting to see what they come up with. I mean, I think you can use Quez situationally in the slot, like a vertical slot, but saying the whole Nelson Agholor thing is not, I mean, Nelson was a very refined route runner. And I'll say this, he was actually a decent blocker for a guy his size. He could put a crackback block on a linebacker. That's not something I see Quez Watkins. And now I should say this, it's not something I've seen from Quez Watkins. Could he develop it? Sure. And I'm sure that they're going to work with him on that. But that just doesn't seem to be his, like, if you're going to run out of 11 personnel, I don't think you want him in the slot.
Yeah, one thing about slot receivers, and Jason obviously was one of the best in Eagles history, not only blocking, but you've got to make those tough physical catches on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not Quez Watkins. Zach Pascal could certainly do it. He's done it before. He's made his money, particularly in the red zone, find that short area. That's, and Jason making those tough third down catches.
Right.
That's a nuanced role there. That's, you know, I think what Jason's getting at. And that's a, not everyone could do that. And I remember talking to the Browns recently that they want to have Anthony Schwartz, who's a track guy out of Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
He's a vertical slot, but they think he could do some short area stuff and run after the catch. He's, I don't know if he's built, I don't know if he's strong enough physically. You gotta be able to play in that phone booth, man. It's not easy. That's not that position, that slot position is not for everybody. It's not as easy as it sounds. Some people think, oh, anyone can do it. No, not everyone can do it. That's right. Not right.
Rob, I'm sorry. What was that analogy? You got to play in a what?
Phone booth.
A what now?
Phone booth?
Never heard of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, how much more mileage do you think we have out of phone booth?
I know.
I thought I read a story that they got rid of the last one in, was it Philly or New York City, Manhattan?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm dumb. Yeah, I'm dumb. I wasn't quite sure the way you were going with that. But yeah, I saw a payphone. I would say coming back from some trip where, you know, you go to a rest stop.
Yeah.
What do they call those on the Jersey Turnpike? There's a name. It's like Molly
Pitcher. Rest areas. They're all named Pitcher, after right. People.
Molly, yeah. Pitcher. Remember Molly Pitcher?
The of course. Rest area? Yes.
So you go in, and then what I'm going to say in the last 6 or 7 years, I saw one, and I remember taking a picture of it. I've since changed phones a bunch of times, but were you a big early 90s? Were you a StarTAC guy? Were you like, what was your first cell phone? Do you remember?
Nokia, I think.
Nokia.
Oh, no, it might have been StarTAC now. It's,
yeah.
It was like that cylinder looking thing. It wasn't the square Nokia, it was like the half, yeah, cylinder.
I always had to get the top, whatever the top of line one was. I wanted to get, you know, the first times the Nokia one. Wasn't that the one, it was like a sort of like a walkie talkie,
yeah,
like
you hit,
yeah, and they play that funny jingle,
yeah, whatever. In fact, I don't know if this is true or not, someone, yeah, told this to me, but the way the Comcast towers in New York in Philly look,
yeah,
one of them kind of looks like the thumb drive, the old thumb drive, because it's got the thin top, and the other one, which was I think the original Comcast building, the top of it sort of looks like the old Nokia phone, right? Because it's like sort of small mini rectangular, you know, the way the flip phone looked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, the StarTAC, yeah. Was a big flip phone for Motorola, and that thing was, everyone had to have the one. That was the beauty of the early to mid 90s, and
yeah.
But we digress a little bit, as we do, and some people get annoyed by it, but because they want all the information. No, we're getting right
good,
to it.
These are good flashbacks. In fact, yeah, I think the first phone I ever had was probably in 2001, and I don't think it had a flip. I think it was just the keypad that you could lock the screen so you didn't have to like press the buttons. But
you didn't have one in college? You didn't have a cell phone in college?
No, they weren't invented when I was in college.
Okay, I'm trying.
I graduated in 99. They were not out. I don't think they were out. I mean, there were car phones.
I have to look it up, but I'm pretty certain I had a StarTAC.
Was that a car? Was that like a car phone that came in like a little?
No, no, no. It was a small. It was a flip phone.
Wow.
StarTAC. Yeah. Google it as Mike.
Well, remember, I went to school in central Pennsylvania, yeah, and we were always about 8 to 12 months behind everything that was like considered technological. So.
But I love that phone, man. And it had the antenna, you know, you'd raise the antenna to get a stronger signal. So, but anyway, yeah.
Like from your shoe, like Maxwell Smart.
You like Get Smart? I loved Get Smart.
I was very young, but I loved it. Agent what, 99? Wasn't that her name? Or agent?
Right, correct. Barbara, yeah. The late Barbara, I shouldn't say late, she might be alive, but Barbara Feldon, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, though I caught that, Lee. I was a really young kid when that stuff was just starting to get old, but I, for whatever reason, I dug it a lot.
The shoe phone was the greatest, man.
It was great.
That was a great Maxwell Smart.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, you're right.
Great. All right, So the newsletter is out, ITB newsletter. Make sure you're subscribed to us. We've gotten a lot of subscriptions. We really appreciate it, but please keep having people that you know spread the word. We keep trying to improve it, make it nice, make it a lot more content. So really look forward to the, you know, keeping that going. So please, if you haven't yet, subscribe to the newsletter. And of course, leave us, as you'll find out today in this episode, if you leave us a 5-star review on Apple reviews or Apple podcast reviews, we will, and leave a question in your review, we promise you we'll answer it on an Ask ITB segment. So the more 5-star reviews, the better for us, obviously. So please keep doing that if you haven't yet. And what else do I want to beg and grovel for? Oh yeah, our YouTube. Please, if you haven't subscribed, please become a subscriber. We're really appreciative of all the growth we've had on our YouTube channel in the last year.
Awesome.
All right, let's get into a few things before we get into the questions. So on our last podcast, Adam, we outlined for everyone that Julian Lurie was going to have a role in the front office moving forward. We said, he's, you know, we were hearing that he was going to have a job with the team. We had talked about the training that he had gone through, the 2-year rotational program with the NFL. And we had talked about even Jeffrey Lurie discussing that he's getting an education now for Julian, so that if Julian wants to take over, spoiler, he's probably going to want to take over, that he'll have the education that even Jeffrey didn't. So, and then I also mentioned, we had a discussion about it. I hope that the Eagles are transparent about it. Yes. If he has a title, they should come through with it. And of course, you know, Bo Wolf, The Athletic, reported on Wednesday that indeed he does have a title, which is, as we can have fun with this, because what's title mean, right? We've been asking that for the last.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is what, you know, and by the way, we got, I'm going to say anywhere from 4 to 6 questions or comments from our show that dropped Monday morning on Julian Lurie, Alec Hallaby. Mm-hmm. One guy's super pissed off. Not at us. He's not happy that.
I love how to qualify that.
Well, I had to, because we get some angry people, like, because they, people can't make up their minds with us. Like, they think sometimes we kiss Eagles ass, sometimes say we're too critical. They just can't make their minds. It's fine. We get a chuckle out of it. Hey, listen, at least you're compelled enough.
You're listening. Right? Exactly. Right.
Right. It's all good. But this guy, he's like, and this is what I was talking about Monday. To just answer some of your questions, what I had meant, we through our sourcing, and we've got great sources around the league of former people who work for the Eagles, or people who know their front office, they're just friendly with them, or the analytics people. We have, Jeff and I know some analytics people that know, they might, either they know Alec Hallaby, or they know, they're just, they've gotten to know their people in the Eagles front office, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that Hallaby's going to get promoted. Like, this is not a secret to anybody.
Right.
Who really follows the Eagles. But the thing that we didn't know Monday when we dropped that show is we knew Julian Lurie's going to be more involved. So you got the Athletic nugget, which dropped Wednesday night, that Julian Lurie's title will be, well, business and football operations strategy. I'm guessing some sort of a director. Might be. He's probably going to be a vice president. That do I know that 100% sure? No, but he's the owner's son, and eventually, I think we could say he's going to take over.
Yes.
So you would think, based he's the owner's son, he'd be a vice president. That would make sense.
Well, sure.
Right. Well, whatever the case may be, as you said, never know with these titles when they throw these around. Like,
right.
Like the, you know, they're it's just easy, like anyone can have one. But you know, Julian is a guy that I what I'd said Monday, just to, again, to clarify, if he's going to be involved, he needs to really learn everything.
Yep.
But my one issue, and the issue that this guy emailed about, and this guy, I didn't respond to him, but I'll respond to him now. And he and I agree on this. I forget what the guy's name was, but if you're going to get involved, don't disrupt what's been going on in the last 2 seasons. They've drafted. Okay. We know that they haven't played this season.
Mm-hmm.
You and I've gotten a lot of comments on their last 2 drafts. Like we JJ Arcega-Whiteside, we got a lot of negative information on the Arcega-Whiteside pick. Back then and since then. Jalen Reagor, it's funny, he hasn't done much at all, but we got some positive, in fact, we got a lot of positive comments on the pick, but what we got was he should have gone later. We couldn't find anyone at a first-round grade on him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's fine. So the 19 and 20 draft seems rather dubious, particularly 19. But the 21 draft got off to a very good start, okay? 22 draft, rave reviews. Even the Calcaterra kid who had the concussion issue that's coming back, guys we talked to around the league like his tape, so we'll see. He's only a six-round pick. He still needs to make the team. But we're not – when we get negative stuff, folks, we give it to you. We don't choose sides. We just tell you what's positive and negative from our sources around the league. So
sure,
my issue with this Julian Lurie thing would be this. If he's going to disrupt what's been pretty good the last two seasons, and as one former Eagles football scouting source over the last 10 years said to me, actually, I wouldn't say 10 years, probably last five or six. Guys know he's somewhere else in the NFL. He said, look, if you're going to make this like the Browns, I'm paraphrasing, this is a phone call I had a week or two ago because he knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
That if you're going to make this like the Browns under Sashi Brown, they're 1-31. And I took note of that. I'm like, I know what you meant. And Sashi Brown's now, ironically, the president of the Ravens after moving to the Washington Wizards in basketball. But
yeah,
but the thing is, Sashi was not a football guy. He was an attorney, and he was to drive home the analytics stuff with Paul DePodesta, who, by the way, hails from Newtown Square, PA. Mm-hmm. But so if Julian is going to change things here, that to me would be if I'm an Eagles fan. That's the thing you got to pay attention to. And Jeff and I will dig on this. We've been on this thing for a couple of weeks. And when we dropped the show Monday morning, people wanted more information, but we give you what we have. We know he's coming in, but right. We don't know what exactly he wants. Like we think it's going to be more analytical, but what does that mean?
We also don't know how much power at this point he has in this position. Howie Roseman is still leading the front office, so that I agree. I think everything you're saying makes really good points, and we'll have to kind of see what his presence is, how much power he actually does have, and then going forward how quickly he increases. Now I know I'm sure there are people who want us to sit here and cry and say this is nepotism, it's terrible, it's bad, but phrased it perfectly. It is what it is. There are about six teams that I can name. Some were really good, some that aren't so good, that have the children of ownership in the front office. There's a Chris Mara, who works for the Giants front office. Yeah. There's a Dan Rooney, who works in the Steelers front office. There's a Tony Khan working in the Jacksonville. Stephen Jones is about as high as you can get in the Dallas Cowboys. And actually, he's been called a good, positive force who reins Jerry in at times. Jonathan Kraft in New England. Like, you're not going to prevent the owner from having his children come up through an organization. So the best thing you can at least do is have the kid, as he did, go through a program that the NFL sponsors to get him educated before you do anything, and then groom him up through the system, because you know it's going to happen. So you might as well get him as much education and training and experience as you can get.
Couple things here. So on that title, business and football operation strategy, I find it interesting, business also, not football operation strategy, which are business too. So we need to look a little bit more in his background.
Right.
It's really fascinating. So, the athletic. You and I know this. We've known this for some time. I can't remember if we mentioned on Monday, but it's definitely true. He moved in earlier this year. He has a office in NovaCare, and it's also in the Athletic also reported it, so we'll certainly credit them.
Right.
What this all means is, as we said, we're going to know over a series of months and weeks, months and years. We don't know. But I suspect, because Al Halaby is one of his closest friends, and we know Halaby's going to get a promotion, whatever that means, we'll see.
Right.
But they cannot. Howie Roseman knows tape. I've talked to countless people who work with him over the years. He learned tape from the late Tom Heckert and Andy Reid and others. Like, he knows what to look for on coaching tape. He also knows analytics.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to, and I know. Look, he has personnel control. He, despite hanging off the scouting part to Andy Waddle, would set the board, but it was Roseman's decision on what they would do, signing and releasing and extending and drafting. Those were his decisions in the end with input.
Mm-hmm.
But now with Julian Lurie coming in and more analytics, what does this mean? And to me, I'm just hoping that Julian Laurie understands it's got to be about the tape. If it's not, this is going to be a problem.
I would agree with you on that. I would agree. It's got to be about the tape. No doubt about it. All right. And then that was a really interesting point, too, that they're sort of inextricably tied together, Alec Hallaby and yep. Julian, because they're close. We know that they're close, and they both are like-minded in analytics. And, of course, right now, Alec Hallaby has a pretty high-ranking job based on analytics, and as we've reported, is about to get even more responsibility. So, like you're saying, it's only something to be concerned about if analytics all of a sudden – out of nowhere rules the roost after two good off seasons in which it seems like they've balanced. They've done a nice job of balancing it. I think that that's fair to say.
Yeah. They're on a roll right now. And the Roseman, people were beating them up in the middle of March. And we said the same thing, man, they better start getting some things done. And boy, did they get some things done.
Right.
So they've had a pretty good off season here. Now, you know, we said this before, if you get one through the draft, you could see some analytical data being used, but you can't say, oh, this is all analytics. Definitely not the case based right. on our analytics people we trust around the league.
Mm-hmm.
But you do wonder, with Julian Laurie now involved, will that change now? Will they look at certain things deeper? And that we'll find out. And I'm assuming this because they'll announce this everything at once within the next week or two.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember you said on our Monday morning show about them being transparent. I'm fascinated. I do wonder if they'll have a press conference of some sort, because we were told that it's a complete restructuring of their scouting and their football operations and scouting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what does that mean? I want to know, is it going to change how they evaluate? I'm fascinated to find out, because with this little revival here, the last 2 years where things are pretty positive here and what an offseason they've had.
Right.
You would think it's going to be now more on the coaches to get this thing going. Now that they're here for a second year.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Jalen Hurts and getting him going here. If it just comes down to that, those guys, you feel good about it. But if they're going to, in 23, 24, and 25, if they're going to start changing the way they grade, we'll see. Don't know.
And as an aside to that, Adam, the Eagles just brought in, Howie Roseman just brought in a lot of new scouting department folks.
Yeah.
From Brandon Hunt to Charles Walls to the kid from Arizona, University of Arizona. What was his name?
Jeremy Gray.
Yeah. Jeremy Gray. And I know there's a couple other.
They're super young, by the way. They've gotten way younger, which – and I say this in our newsletter, I responded to one of the questions. And one of the things I said was, getting younger does not mean better. There's nothing wrong with getting younger, because you get new, fresh ideas. Sometimes people who are in their late 20s, early 30s are more forward thinking. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't have scouting experience, if they've only been doing a couple of years, like when you go into a school, if you're a college scouting director, or if you're an area scout for whatever team you work for, you develop sources over the years, just like you and I do. You know who to talk to. Do these people know how to coach the younger? Like, let's say the Charles Wallace guy. This is a major jump that he's having from national scout to director of player, a director of player personnel.
Right.
They have two of them, like they did before. That's a big jump. So does he know how to coach? Like, this to me is. It's a little risky, but we need more information. We're going in with open eyes here, but this is a little bit forward thinking here. We have to see how much experience these guys have.
Yeah, and the point I was going to make with some of these new guys, those three that I mentioned, and trying to think, was Matt Russell, who knows the team, but he is still new now in his role, and Rod Streeter coming in, and whoever else. You what you wonder is, do they know that they're coming in to potentially an environment where analytics may, we don't know, we're just having the discussion here. Did they sign up for that? You know, these guys are kind of personnel guys at heart. They're football scouts at heart. Are they about to join an organization that emphasizes analytics way more than they thought they were going to be? You know, because that can drive some people away. It can make people annoyed. You know, if you're signed on for one thing and you think you're putting this amount of work into it, and you realize the grading system is different now, and analytics are more than the tape, as you were saying. That's why you hope it doesn't change, because with all the new people here, you don't want all of a sudden there to be discord because they don't agree with the amount of analytics that are now being that could be influencing the decisions.
Yeah, because this past draft, it's hard to pinpoint. We ran the names of the players that were drafted through scouting people around the league, analytics people. You couldn't pinpoint anything that was totally analytics. Like Jordan Davis meets some part of it, mm-hmm. but as one very strong analytics person who you and I know very well said with another team, he said, this is not an analytics pick. He goes, part of it is, but if you want to say, is it totally? No, it's not. And he explained to me why. He goes, you must have production in analytics. You don't just draft a guy because he has this score and he has height, weight, and speed. No, you have to, you can't draft a guy because he's just long or he's got some athletic traits. We'll talk about more of this in the next show because we want to get to other stuff, but mm-hmm. it's fascinating. It's really fascinating where this thing could go, but I wish we had more for you folks.
Right.
But we've been working on this for 2 weeks and it's still fluid because they haven't hired everyone.
Right.
And it's completely changing the in terms of the restructuring. But again, well, we don't know about the grades. We don't know how much more, if at all, you would think more analytical, but how could that be? Because they're an analytical building somewhat.
Right.
Are they the most analytical building in the NFL? Who knows?
Like, what's Matt Russell? I mean, he comes in to kind of fill the role left behind by Tom Donahoe, right? And, yeah, I mean, he's sort of like a senior advisor role. You know, he comes from Denver and he's been a field scout for, you know, going back to way back when he was here under Heckert. So, you know, you would wonder, how does he feel about that? Does he know? I don't know.
Oh, he has to know. I mean, he's known Howie forever. So you would think.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, so maybe he does know, but, you know, we'll see. Yep. Tom Donahoe has not resurfaced yet, right?
No. Okay. You know, and you know, people have asked us, why did he leave? Don't know the exact reason. We talked recently about how much of a mentor he was for Roseman and Andy Weidel and other people. I cannot see him. My personal opinion would be, based on people we've spoken with and based on what we've known the last couple weeks, I can imagine this is the kind of front office he'd want to be a part of. In terms of analytics, in terms of, he may not like all these people, I couldn't tell you, although everyone loves him. But in terms of being super analytical, this is just not his background at all.
That's true. And you go back to the Milton Williams pick, which is, there's analytics involved with that pick, but there's also analytics that were, not, I don't want to say ignored, but not, I mean, he's short-armed. So he does not fulfill the analytics requirement there. But he really tested well at the position for his size, his weight, his speed. We had that discussion about Trent McDuffie, who, you know, had short arms as a corner, but he tested well in other areas. But Milton Williams was a guy whose analytics were good other than the short arms.
See, I give the Eagles credit in one thing, because they get knocked to be too analytical. They've taken some play, like Andre Dillard, short arms.
Yeah.
Now but the one thing, though, if you, not all of them, but if you look at most picks that they've had, they're super, like, the Eagles have a lot of athletic players.
Mm-hmm.
That goes to the testing data for analytics. So I get that part of it.
Right.
But it's hard to just nail down, other than Davion Taylor, who was severely overdrafted.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say this pick's all analytics. It's hard to pinpoint those kind of picks.
I'm trying to think, who's the most analytical pick that the Eagles have made? Probably Davion Taylor.
No, you ready for this one?
Uh-huh.
Jordan Mailata.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, probably.
Think about it. Height, weight, speed, athleticism, power, arm length. Yep. Are you kidding me? We didn't know it because he had no production, though, so you can't say that.
Uh-huh.
But my God. And it's also in the newsletter. The other question I asked, someone asked about Jordan Mailata and how good he could be and all that. So what we did is we asked three people that very quickly, when we got the email, we asked, and we got it through text. We didn't ask them to rank the 32 teams, because there's some names, like, as you pointed out, to be Laramie Tunsil should have been on there. And the problem with
Tyron Smith.
Tyron Smith. Our understanding, his tape has not been nearly as good as it used to be.
Yeah, that's fair.
And he's I had one guy,
fair.
But he's also been hurt with his back. I had one guy tell me, he goes, you have no idea how good Tyron Armstead's tape is. I was like, yeah, but he always hurt.
Yeah.
It's really still really good. That's why Miami's paying him $50 million a year.
Yeah.
Because it's still good.
Yep.
But you know, look, it's Jordan Mailata. Not only does he have a chance to be the best left tackle in Eagles history. Sorry, Trey Thomas. He's not there yet. But we hope to have Trey back this fall.
I mean, there's also a Jason Peters in there.
I know. But is drafted by the Eagles.
Oh, drafted by
the Eagles. Right, drafted. I should have said that.
Gotcha.
But this kid, he just turned 25. Just turned 25 in March.
Wow. It's amazing.
Yep.
Wow, 25?
Yeah, I thought he was older than that. If you go on YouTube and watch the rugby film, he's wearing the rugby shirt, the striped shirt.
Yeah.
And the people are half the size. You know, he's 6'8". And then I don't know how much he weighed then. I couldn't tell you. But you're seeing him wearing this rugby shirt with those huge thighs.
Right.
And running like this, if you're seeing me on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And they look like ants below him. And, I was able to hang around with him just a couple minutes at the the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really fit now. You know, he's trimmer. What is he, trimmer? Yeah, for him, being 375 is trim.
Yeah.
Because he's a giant human being. He's just everything. His features are just huge. It's massive.
Sure.
But it's just, the question would be is what is his upside? I mean, could he be, once Trent Williams retires, could he be the left tackle? That's the question.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't doubt this kid because what we've heard about him is he's so competitive and he takes the hard coaching from Stoutland.
Yeah.
He wants to be great. And that's very important.
I think what we'd have to see is there's no doubt he knows how to move. He uses his weight to and his enormousness to his strength, playing backwards, pass protection. Not that he's bad at it by any stretch of the means, but I think that when you see him in situations where they have to pass the ball 24 to 30 times, how good is he compared to how, when they run the ball that often? So that to me is the part of his game that it's almost like an incomplete. I don't know if he's great or not great because they just didn't pass the ball
he's
that much.
Really good,
and when they did, it's a lot of short RPO stuff. I want to see like the real true, you know, 5-step, 7-step drop pass protection from him.
His issue is what we pointed out either last summer or the year before. His technique, because right. Stalin teaches what Trey Thomas told us about the catch technique.
Double underhand hooks.
Right. It's not natural when you're trying to sync up the technique and what Stalin's teaching him and mm-hmm. playing fast. It's hard because he doesn't have football on his background, only his rugby.
Right.
And that's why there's so much room for growth, because at some point, you know, if you put him on a 10-point scale as a technique, he's probably somewhere on 6, 6.5. Where Jason Peters is probably a 9 or a 10 down the road. This will only be his third full year starting. Remember, the first years he didn't play.
Yeah.
I know he had one surgery, but he had multiple injuries. And now he's good. He took the note about getting his weight down under 400 pounds very well. He took it well.
Mm-hmm.
And the sky's the limit. This offensive line, by the way, it's something else. And their depth, we're going to get into within the next 2 weeks, we're going to start our offseason roster shows.
Yeah.
We outline contracts, what we know about them, what the Eagles think about the future of these players. And Jack Driscoll, a lot of people have asked us about him. That's good. I'm assuming they're going to open that up, that right guard position.
I would think that would be pretty good competition.
Yeah.
We'll get into that. Yeah. Like you said, starting next week. All right. New Edition Consulting is a boutique newsletter consultancy that partners with entrepreneurs, early stage startups, and media entities looking to launch, maintain, and grow their newsletter offering. Simply put, every brand today is in the business of deepening their connection with their community. An intentional, consistent newsletter is the spine that holds this effort together, allowing you to connect deeper with your audience than you can on your social media channels. New Edition provides one-on-one, end-to-end, 360-degree newsletter support to all of their busy and talented clients. Think of them as an accountability partner, content strategist, growth marketer, and an admin all rolled up into one. So if you've been looking to launch and/or transform your newsletter offering but simply haven't had the time, tools, or support, head to newedditionconsulting.co and book a free exploratory call with their team. All right. Cool. Let's get into the questions, my friend.
Oh yeah, by the way, our sponsor right there does our newsletter. They're local.
Yes.
Local. Yeah, which is great. We love supporting the local businesses.
Go New Edition.
Yep. New Edition Consulting. Is that their
New company? Edition Consulting. Not to be confused with the R&B group from the 90s, New Edition. Bobby Brown.
All right. So yeah, no question. From the Apple. Dean, I hope I hope those numbers you put in your name isn't your phone number, but that's another
thing. Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. Please, so don't, because it's funny. I notice on Twitter people sign up, like they'll use Scotty, 215-355-325-412. I'm like, man, I hope they didn't put their phone number out there.
Yeah, usually with someone with that many numbers in their username is like a bot, but this seems like a real question.
No, this is a good one. No, this is, I'm interested to see how you're going to respond to this one.
Okay.
Dean says, great show as usual. Is there such a, this is probably stemming from our last show on the front office stuff. This is interesting. I have to think about this one. Is there such a thing as draft continuity from one draft to the next? And is it possible Cunningham and or Brown, that means Ian Cunningham, Brandon Brown, who both left to become assistant GMs, were doing deep dives on a few quarterbacks from the 2023 draft. What are your thoughts on that question?
So this has actually been addressed before by Howie. And I don't know how honest he's been, but he has, like when they drafted Carson Wentz and they moved up all the way from, what was it, 13-8-1 or 13-6-1?
Two,
right. I remember Howie saying that they looked toward the future drafts and they just felt like that was the better time to get a quarterback. So they, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that people within the Eagles front office, and maybe one of those two, were taking a look at the quarterback landscape the following year. But honestly, I hope, Adam, just from my own viewpoint, mm-hmm. that you can only assign so much value judgment on that a year in advance, because how many guys sort of, including Carson Wentz himself, kind of come out of nowhere and have good senior years and you didn't expect
Joe Flacco. Right. Joe Flacco had after his junior season, a seventh round grade from one of the scouting services. I don't know if it was Blesto or the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And then he blew it up his senior year.
Sure.
And had a good senior bowl week. So yeah, it's a great point you make. So Dean, yeah, I definitely believe they've looked at the next year's draft, because, we know that it's, you got to be careful with that stuff, but it mm-hmm. is true. Teams absolutely do this. Now, here's the thing, to move your question forward, Dean, because they're gone now, and the guy Charles Walls, who came from Cleveland, he was only a national scout, so now he's got to, this is a big jump for him.
Yeah.
So someone's got to start doing that. And obviously the draft people here, Anthony Patch is there. What's his title's what? Director of College Scouting? Is that correct?
He's one of them.
I don't know how many they have now.
I think he's the senior director of College Scouting.
Yeah.
But isn't Alan Wolking, he was the assistant director?
He was assistant director. And we're told he's getting promoted
to senior assistant director of
College. No. He's getting actually... if I recall correctly, it's going to be something. It might be like assistant personnel director or.
Sure. Who is going to be the director of college scouting now?
I don't know.
Okay. So the point is, we know who's good at what. We know Patch and Wolking are college guys mostly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And same thing with this Charles Wall. So they'll be looking in to quarterbacks this year. In fact, I mean, nobody knows, the common fan doesn't know this, but there are some scouting, I guess, services that are independent, like Blesto and NFS teams are actually having their meetings with. Blesto was like last week, and I think NFS is the national, what's NFS stand for? National Football Scouting?
Yes.
Yeah, that's this week. So a lot of teams are going to these right now and getting all the information that they need for the prospects or the people that they need to watch single school across the country for this next upcoming season.
Yep. Correct. So good stuff, Dean. That's a good question. This one was a general question. The guy, I didn't know his screen name was odd. I sorry, but the guy will know when we answer this. for training camp, have you guys thought about doing a live show for one of the open training camps? That would be pretty fun to follow throughout the open camp day. We have. We actually, Jeff and I taped a show last summer. I think it was last summer, two summers ago. In fact, I remember we taped it. Then I flew out west, I think, that day. So, yes. Would you want to do a live?
Do you think the Eagles will let us? I mean, I thought the only people who could do a live show from training camp was WIP because they're broadcast partners.
Yeah, if they're partner. Yeah, but if we're not doing it, because what happens is WIP has a trailer right in the corner of the end zone almost, in back of the corner of the end zone.
Right.
You're probably right.
They're not going to let it. I'll tell you right now. They're not going to let us, because if they let us do a live stream, then every single new media outlet is going to want to do a live stream, right. And then they're going to. They're not going
to
allow that.
Although, you know, it's funny. When we before the pandemic, we used to tape our show in the press box after we drop our Sunday morning show.
Yeah.
I kind of like that. It's kind of cool.
That was cool. We've grown. We've evolved a little bit. Yeah, we used to do it from my phone, though. I would put my phone. My phone horizontally. We would have to squeeze it. This is actually before the pandemic, right? We would squeeze in and do our 20-minute post game from the Spanish language broadcast booth that was vacated by that point.
It was Ricky Ricardo's, right?
Yeah, Ricky Ricardo. They'd be gone because it would be an hour after the game.
He's the best, by the way.
Oh, I love Ricky. Ricky's the man.
All right, so this is.
But by the way, real quick though, like the reason why WIP can get away with it, not only are they partners, but they don't actually live stream or do play. They don't tell you what's going on. They just do their show. It'll be DeCameron Ritchie and
they'll
be talking sports.
Well, it's funny.
They can talk Phillies. They can talk hockey. They can talk.
What's funny you say, because my thought process wasn't even live doing play by play. It was just.
Doing a podcast?
Well, no, what we would do is, practice is over. Let's go live from there.
Yeah.
Why couldn't we do that?
Oh, at the end of practice?
Yeah. Not,
I mean, does it, at that point, what's the difference between what we do here and what?
It's
just the background. I'll just set a virtual background to be the link.
Yeah, I don't know. Chime in. I think it would have some value. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
It might. Possibly.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to the next one.
This is a good one. This is fun because this is for us over 50. You know, it's I love when people bring up names like that I vaguely remember, but I'm going to. So Chris from Star, Idaho.
Idaho?
ID is Idaho, right?
Yeah, because Indiana would be IN, right?
IND,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. So. ITB, like talking with your buddies, if your buddies know the birds. Been an Eagles fan since Roman Gabriel, number 5, by the way, where I could see, Chris, I could see some of it, still see him wearing that white shirt, the white jersey, the sanitary uniforms, the white ones. I love those, by the way.
Number 5 will always love you. Just
yeah, the number other five. Number 5. I think it was number 5, if I recall correctly. I'm your typical rabid, irrational Philly sports fan with the smash remotes to prove it. Really?
Oh, my jeez.
You really smash? Oh, my God. Jeez. Okay. Be careful. Don't
remotes. Well, listen, man. Technology is way too expensive these days to be smashing.
My wife and I have must-be Fios 4 remotes because they don't always last.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes we misplace them, fall into a couch, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens.
Have you ever, as a fan, were you a Mets fan growing up? From New York?
Oh, dude, you're trying to get me in some real hot water.
Well, no, well, whatever team you like, did you ever throw anything?
Yeah,
I do this.
It's gonna be right up your alley. I'm not gonna evade the question. You put me on the spot. I did grow up a Mets fan, but as most people who have known
doing
me,
good now.
Yeah. I gave that up. You know, once you get into this industry, because I was a baseball writer.
Yeah.
First. So I completely now people say no, that's impossible. No, it's truly possible. I do not root for any I don't feel any emotion when a team that I used to be a Knicks fan, a Mets fan, and a what did I miss there? Knicks, Mets, Giants. I feel it's like the fire just completely goes out.
How about
probably Philly? I probably like the Packers and Steelers more than the Giants, just because I enjoy processes and the Ravens, right? It's true. It really is true.
So the fans out of you, do you root for I know you follow Phillies because you do a podcast, but are you a fan or like, or at all?
I made the comparison. I said like being a Phillies fan is just like being a Mets fan, just different color laundry, because they, you know, they're both a organization with history of bad ownership, history of bad contracts, history of every once in a while having a good season, like the Mets are having one now. But, you know, for the most part, it's, you're just used to disappointment. But yeah, I get no joy, not even the slightest bit anymore, of any of my former teams. I haven't watched a Knicks game probably in 30 years. I'm not lying to you. I have not watched a Knicks game since the mid 90s.
2 years ago, Julius Randle had a great year and they were so much fun to watch. This past season were terrible.
Yeah.
But I cannot believe I'm going to do this, and shame on me for saying this. I'm actually rooting for the Celtics. I grew up hating them.
That's the one thing New Yorkers and Philadelphians can get on board with. I cannot root for the Celtics.
But I love, I'm a big Jason Tatum fan and Jaylen Brown and Udoka, who's he was assistant here.
Yep.
He's a great coach. He's done a tremendous job. I just like watching. I love the way they play. I know Al Horford sucked here. He just was put into a bad position.
Yeah.
He is so much fun to watch, and he's a heart and soul type glue guy. I'm kind of rooting for him. I can't believe, because I hated, I called them the Celt pricks growing up. I despised Danny H. I hated, for those of you over 50, I hated ML Carr with a passion.
Everybody. You get a little guy at the end of the bench trying to act like he's the star of the
jerk. I hated him.
Yeah. I watch the Phillies every night, you know, and I
do.
I don't know how I do it without putting myself in a straitjacket. But
Jeff and I text each other. We make fun of the Phillies because it's so pathetic how they've underachieved.
Oh, it's like a clown show. It's really terrible.
What is it, before we move on here, and this applies to the Eagles, because the Eagles don't have like a farm team, but they have rookies. And, you know, you train them. It's kind of like Bryson Stott, right, who did great in spring training, has been horrendous at the plate, like terrible.
Yeah.
Double, I call it the double Mendoza line when you're batting under 100, 150. You might.
Yeah.
So it's like, remember when
Nate Brown, is that no longer referred to now as the Scott Kingery line?
Right. Scott Kingery. Oh, God. Yeah. Another guy. So you remember Nate Brown? Were you covering the team then?
I was a little right after that, but I know, you know, just from being a reporter, knew who he was and what his story was about.
He's a training camp superstar.
Yeah.
Slot receiver, tough physical.
Yep.
Dropped everything in the regular season. He couldn't stop dropping the football.
If I'm not mistaken, he got cut after 1 year, right?
I don't recall. I think he went to North Carolina. In fact, when he was drafted, everyone called him Nah Brown.
Right.
N-A. There was no E. But he's another, like, you remember Hank Baskett? Were you covering them then?
Yes, I covered Hank Baskett.
He's another guy. But when you got to the regular season, he became a non-factor. Like, there was... The biggest training camp superstar I can remember is Hank Baskett. In terms of offense, he was incredible.
He was. He went through 2 weeks of making every single acrobatic catch that you could imagine. Yeah.
So I transferred to the Phillies. Scott Kingery. Mm-hmm. Then the former GM signs with this crazy contract, and now he can't even, he stinks.
Right.
But you got Bryce Stott, who was terrific. Mickey Moniak, who was terrific in spring training. And then he broke his wrist.
He broke his ring. He got hit right on in his last at bat. Yep.
He was doing great. He finally turned. He was terrible before that, but he started hitting.
Yeah.
And then he comes back. He's been bad since he's come back. He hasn't been back for very long. But
I mean, yeah, it's a very small sample size. Right. Like exactly. Gabe. He's already pinch hits the other night. He takes him out of the game and puts in. Who did he pinch hit with him? I can't remember at the moment. Oh, Odubel Herrera. And I'm like, you know, way to really rebuild this guy's confidence. He's trying to get back into the flow. Yeah. And you basically take a guy that ordinarily you would bat eighth or ninth in your lineup, seventh, eighth, or ninth, with Odubel Herrera, if you had like a healthy lineup, and pinch hit for him. It's like, great move. You know, what are we doing here?
Right. So just tying to the Eagles, it's, you know, you don't have a minor league system. You basically are rookie. You have rookies and you get them to your offseason program.
Mm-hmm.
You hope over a series of years, because we've said since we started ITB that the Peterson staff did not develop a lot of younger players. That, to me, player development was not great.
Right.
I know they had a lot of success. I'm not doubting that. But the one thing they did not get done is the development. And I know some of the drafts clearly were not good enough. Some were not. And now if the 18 draft class looks really good,
mm-hmm.
but that's the thing. Any Phillies fans knows this. And you could go back since the heydays of Ryan Howard and Utley and those guys and J-Roll, it's just steadily going down. The lack of development for the minor league system.
Especially pitchers. Right? I mean, there are some notable misses, obviously, in the field as well. Sure. But pitching, they have not developed. I don't even count Aaron Nola because he was considered one of the most pro-ready prospects coming out of
LSU.
LSU. You know, he's not overpowering. He doesn't throw 98, 99. He just always had really good command and control. And he did immediately from single A in his first year. I mean, he was up in the majors almost immediately because he could. It wasn't – so I hate to say that I just want – like the Phillies didn't screw him up. But it's not like I sit here and say the Phillies really built him into what he was because he was just ready to go. But any sure. other pitcher they brought in, you know, in the Klentak era was just a disaster or drafted has not Klentak. Been great.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the way it has been.
So let's tie this back to – so Chris is not a question but a request. And see, folks, if you remember this name. Mm-hmm. Vaguely, I remember. It says, please bring up the legend of Tom Gillespie. The left tackle, 1986, who was so miserable against Washington Monday night, he never played another down. Is that right? If memory serves me correctly, he gave up two or three sacks to Dexter Manley and then 40 yards of false starts. John Madden was screaming for Buddy to pull him. Just a bit of awesome old lore that seems to be forgotten. Kind of like Winston Justice.
Yeah, I was going to say this just sounds like a Winston Justice. You know, just several years later, about what 20 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tom Gillespie.
Yeah, 20. Huh? Yeah, almost. One more less.
I don't recall Tom Gillespie.
Well, I do remember the name, but I didn't.
I mean, I was 11 years old.
Right. I remember. I do remember the name, but I used to see Jaws when Jaws was got there in the late 70s. That's when I became an Eagles fan or a fan of the NFL. And there was a guy named Ed George. For those of you who are old enough to remember. I think he might have been 64. I'm not totally positive. He was a guard, I think. And if you're watching me on YouTube, see this? Holding 64, and I used to tease Jaws about that. I'm like, what was with Ed George on the holding penalty? We would laugh. He might have gotten from the Colts. But it's just funny how you remember certain players and what their errors were, whether they were Sixers or – like Al Harris.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the better DBs coaches in the league. He got a lot of holding penalties as a corner for the Eagles. He just was known for getting holding penalties.
Yes. That's why he was always a better slot corner than an outside corner.
Okay, there you go. So I just remember Ed George, again, I think 64 without looking it up. I just, certain things about my childhood. But Chris, good memory of Tom Gillespie. Now you're going to make me look it up. And then the final one from Sambuca 10.
I got to answer your other question.
Oh, good.
Because it's a pretty funny story. You asked me if I ever broke something, you know, throwing it over a sporting event.
Yes.
This is right up your alley, brother.
Oh, no. What did you do?
When I was a kid, when I was really young, I must have been in, I don't know, like fifth or sixth grade. So what are we talking about? 11, 12, maybe 13. I was watching a WWF, because that's what it was called then.
Go ahead.
Wrestling matches.
No, you didn't.
And the Macho Man cheated. Go figure. He went under the ring and
good baseball grabbed, player, by the way.
An object and whacked, I think, Hogan over the head with something. And I got so mad that I took, you remember the wrestling, you know, the rubber wrestling?
Yeah, I had him. Yeah.
I got so mad. I took my Macho Man one and I flung it across my room and I hit my glass window and shattered it.
Oh, did your mom or dad come up?
I had to literally tell my mom how I broke my window. You know, and it shattered pretty bad. So you would think something really, really terrible happened, not me taking a Macho Man Savage figure
that's
and
great.
Throwing it across
that's
my
great.
Room.
Wow, that reminds me of when Terry Funk scared the hell out of me when I was a kid in high school, or maybe even before that.
Great, another that, Adam Kaplan wrestling.
This well, awesome. Well, no. I believe it or not, I was paid to take him around town and. When he worked for the pre-ECW, it was called the Tri-State Wrestling Alliance. But great guy, very, very kind. But he was so, and I would watch, in the last year or so, I watched the videos on YouTube. He was an old school bad guy, and he went way overboard. One time he brought a gun in. I assume it was a prop gun, but it went off. You could see it if you go to YouTube. And I was in eighth or ninth grade. Again, I knew wrestling was a put on. But I wasn't 100% sure probably back then. And that dude scared me. And I actually told him that. I said, man, you're so kind. I thought you were like, you know, I thought you were a real bad guy.
Well, the crazy thing is, I think I knew wrestling was not real, and I still flung the damn thing over.
I can't believe it. I know. I love it.
I don't know why I got so mad.
No, because they got what they wanted out of you. They got a response. They wanted you to respond. And it's funny how Macho Man then became a good guy. So good stuff. We'll do our stories podcast before. We'll tie it in, you know, to the Eagles and NFL. But
right. I never lost my composure over.
What did your parents say? Wait a minute. What did your parents say after? They're like, "What's wrong with you? Like, what did they say?"
Yeah, years of therapy. No. listen, I just had to own it. I'm like, look, I didn't. I flung this thing. I was aiming for one thing, and I wound up hitting my window, and I definitely got in trouble.
Well, that's just you should have. Jeez, you broke the window.
I don't think I cried either. I don't think anything ever brought me such joy that I cried. Although maybe if Mike, the only team that really does it for me now is Penn State football.
Oh yeah.
I was a big UConn basketball growing up. So when they won their first championship, that was really cool. In the Jim Calhoun era, that was amazing. Cause remember they had to beat Duke in the semifinal first. And that was an amazing win that they got, before they beat, it was a Georgia Tech. Now who did they get their first champion? It might've been Georgia Tech either way. I think that's who it was. So that was awesome. And I remember just feeling so surreal because Calhoun had come close. And then he finally broke through. So that was amazing. But I never really lost my, like,
I get more upset at fantasy when the players underachieve. No, this thing is, my wife's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Well, do you want me to yell?" I just go like this. I punch my hand.
That's funny.
Yeah. Cause she's like, "Why do you care about this?" Cause I got money. You know, I pay to get in these leagues, you know, most of them I do.
Right.
I want to win. Nobody wants to lose. But every girlfriend I've had never could understand, because I was playing in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I go so far back, folks. Remember Reggie Brooks, who played for Washington? He was like my sleeper of the year that year. He did okay. And I think he now works for Notre Dame football. But I remember like being so upset because he kept getting hurt. And my girlfriend then like yelled at me, because why do you care about this stuff? I'm like, it's a guy thing. You wouldn't understand. You know, I'm like, you don't get it. But of course, now ladies play fantasy.
Now. Yeah, I definitely had to do my fair share of explaining fantasy football. Upset of my mood.
Look, it's nobody likes to lose, but last one here. This is.
Wait, before you get to the last one, we got to tell people about our friends at PHLSportsNation.com, enhancing the fans' experience with their coverage of all Philadelphia sports teams for the fan, by the fan. Is their motto. So make sure you're checking them out at phlsportsnation.com and on Twitter at @phlsportsnation. Let's also pause for a word from our other great sponsors, including our friends at Sky Motor Cars.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Sky Motor Cars in Westchester is a different sort of dealership. All it takes is one look at their Highline pre-owned vehicles that people all over the country want and need. Owner Brett Schulder, make sure you don't spend a dime of your money before you purchase the car. Sky Motor Cars allows you to make all the decisions regarding your next vehicle. At Sky Motor Cars, you never have to spend more than necessary. Visit skymotorcars.com today or call 610-918-7225.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And if you hop into Sky Motor Cars out there in Westchester, PA, make sure you tell them Adam and Jeff sent you. You will get a great deal. Guess and what? By the way, that first UConn championship was over Duke. The second one was over Georgia. But beating Duke for a national championship, that was amazing.
Huge. And I love that Jim Calhoun got that win. But, oh, by the way, Sky Motor Cars on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. Folks, they do deliveries too. You could follow them on Twitter. And also on their IG is really cool.
Oh yeah, especially if you like nice cars.
Yeah, well, Marcus Peters, they delivered a car to him. Brett Shoulder, the owner. There's a great picture of him sitting in front of the Ravens facility in Owings Mills, Maryland, and delivering the car. Marcus Peters' car. Pretty cool.
So Is that the nicest facility in the league?
It's nice, Ravens facility. Oh no, the Vikings is like a college campus. It's ridiculous. Oh,
okay. I haven't seen the Vikings.
And the Cowboys. I've not been to the I've only been to the Cowboys training camp, which is in Oxnard.
Right.
Part of it. But the
Ravens thing, it looks like a country club castle, like when you drive
kinda,
up.
Yeah.
There's and then you go little... in and it's like they got the fireplace burning.
Now that you say that, the front of it. So I only go to training camp. I've been to OTAs before. In fact, I might go this year. We'll see.
Right.
But now that you say it, because their training camp is at their facility, generally, I think for the most part for decades.
Yes, but, I think that.
Owings Mills. I actually played golf there, Kays Valley, right around the corner.
Oh, nice.
Not very well.
Yeah, it's a nice area. It's a beautiful area.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah.
You got to love their address is One Winning Way.
A bunch of teams have that where they use the football.
Sure.
Moniker motif in it. So do we want to get to this last one?
Yeah, last one.
All right. So from Sambuca, 10 great teachings. Love the show. It gives me a lot of info. It teaches me more.
Wait, time out. His name is Sambuca?
Sambuca 10.
Sambuca, that's a drink, right? That's
it makes me gag.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. But go ahead.
Cool name. Love the show. It gives me a lot of info and teaches me more about the game, and which helps as an aspiring analyst. Mm-hmm. I also am an Eagles fan in D.C., and going to a game here, it's almost like being in Philly. You know, it is true.
It is. He's saying because there's so many Eagles fans.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I know the watcher fans hate that, but hey, you know what? Your team's not very good and you guys don't pack the house.
Team isn't good. So, stadium isn't good. Ownership isn't good.
Not very good.
Yeah. Yep.
Last time I went, it was a must win for the Eagles and it was a sea of green. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Question for you guys. With question marks on Sanders' future with the team, if he's healthy this season, do you want to see him resign? If not, what kind of running back do you want to see drafted, signed in his replacement? We don't work for the team, so it's not really our decision. But in terms of analyzing the decision based on what we know how they work, they rarely walk away from good players. They're not in the business of doing that. They like to develop their players and reward their players. But this particular player, despite the tape being good, mm-hmm. he's had a major injury history. Mm-hmm. Not like bad long-term injuries, but nagging, soft tissue. Knee, this, that, and the other. We reported on our show his rookie season. I think it was this 19 was his first
hamstrings.
We had the nugget that he had strains on both hamstrings.
Yep, rookie year.
Right. Okay. And that was the spring. So yeah, he's had trouble staying healthy. You can't. What's that saying? You can't help the club in the tub. He misses too much time. Good sure. player, good kid. But you know what? To answer your question, Sambuca, 10. I personally, if Jeff and I were running the team, he's got to play at least 14 of the 17 teams. He's got to do great. In fact, I don't base everything on how many touchdowns they score. If I'm not mistaken, he didn't score last season.
He did not have a touchdown, a rushing touchdown last year.
That can't happen. I'm sorry. That you can't reward that. No.
Well, but it's. I mean, there were plenty of for whatever reason. Kenneth Gainwell was the. It's not like Miles Sanders was stopped at the goal line six times and he was a bad goal line back. He just didn't.
It was so weird.
Yeah,
and he converted. Too. You're right about Gainwell. Now you mentioned that. It was so odd because there was no sign of that in training camp. But you and I left to get. We were Jeff and I were at a practice together, and we. we weren't counting, but it seemed like Gainwell had 50 catches in one practice.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the area where he really didn't get the football enough.
That's correct. It's very odd. He was a power back. Well, he wasn't really, but they used him like one.
And we had Ryan Silverfield, his Memphis head coach, on. And I'm not saying he was wrong, but he thought, like most people, they'd use Gainwell and Sanders together and split out Gainwell. We didn't really see that. So no. Maybe in year two, we will.
No. Well, all right. So, yeah, I'm with you. I just think it's going to be a weird season for him because if he does really, really well, he's got that kind of explosion that doing really well means he could make a lot of money on the open market. I don't think the Eagles would want to pay
him
a top five type running back salary. But – the Eagles weren't afraid. People think the Eagles are afraid to play running backs. They paid LeSean McCoy. It's not like they'd be averse to it. I just think that they would have to work something out that works for, but they're not just going to sit there and give him Christian McCaffrey money or Derrick Henry money, even if he has that good of a year. It's going to have to be something where it works for both sides.
Yeah, I could see a tag. I could see a tag if he
possibly.
I think that or actually a transition tag, but you wouldn't get anything for it. You just get you read a first refusal, but
we'll
see what happens with him. It's a good question. It's just kind of up in the air. He's just got to stay on the field. That you can't pay a guy not to play. That's just not the way it works. But good stuff here. We actually have more questions. We'll get to it in the next show.
Yes, we do. All right, that was a good one. That'll be everything right now for this edition of Inside the Birds, the leading podcast in Eagles Intel. Want to give a thanks to our new producer, Tyler Strasser, who's been an intern with us for a while, and he's going to be taking over the duties. Thank you, Tyler, for your hard work.
And but who's he taking over for?
We're taking over for Hunter Brody, who is getting a as we understand it, perhaps a larger role in his other job. And, we'll talk more about that a little bit later.
So proud of him, man. He's a great dude.
Yeah, very proud of Hunter Brody. So that will do it. And we want to thank you for flying with us inside the bird.